Welcome to Us with me, Dr. Crystal Lee Crane, where we have critical conversations on the challenges of our time. Come dig in with me and my guests as we tackle critical discussions about the hard lines we draw regarding morality, inequality, and the spirit. Listen while we focus on the intersections of truth and justice as we learn how to coexist, pushing our social transformation to the next level. Let's get ready to be inspired and engage in questions about humanity and believe in a different world. As we look forward to listeners who want to experience media from an intersectional and healing justice perspective, Us with Dr. Crystal Lee starts now. International solidarity is not a new notion for me as an activist and as a person who identifies as a global citizen. Welcome to Us with Dr. Crystal Lee Crane. I've had a long interest in how we identify what self-determination and governance means to us. I'm curious about how people use or misuse power in the name of a government or in the name of, quote-unquote, the people. I want to see a world where people have the right to choose how they are governed and how they are able to fully live their lives. Recently, I traveled to the Philippines and spent time in Manila and the Bangsamoro Autonomous Region of Muslim Mindanao to get a historical perspective on the importance of this year's 2022 presidential election and beyond. During this episode, you will hear from education leaders, government leaders, and others who have witnessed these changes and often tumultuous social and political struggles that have brought them to this moment in time. These brave leaders will discuss their country and how the U.S. imperial relationship impacts the livelihood of people in the Philippines. Stay with us for the next hour and learn about the relationship between the U.S. and the Philippines, tap into the importance of the May 9th election and what the results may mean for the people of the Philippines. I'm your host, Dr. Crystal Lee Crane, and this is Us on Transformation Talk Radio. Meet Sara Raimundo, Professor of Global Studies at the University of the Philippines.
So basically, we have here the All-UP Workers Alliance. So it's an alliance of working. It's an alliance of rank and file and teaching, right? So rank and file plus professors, and basically those who have regular items. You're familiar with that, right? If you're from government, you're granted an item and you get tenure. If you're staff, then 6 months, you get regularized. If you're faculty, then it takes about, you need at least a master's or a PhD and so on and so forth. So it takes years and years, right? So if you have an item, you can be organized, be part of the union. So this union has been there for a long time, but the first union, which was, I don't remember, on a Pope, that's how it was called. When I was a student, there was already the All-UP Workers Union. So basically, the All-UP Workers Union won over the old union, which, you know they had problems with financial opportunism and so on and so forth. So at the time, it was the late 90s and the time was ripe for a new union to emerge. And one of those who founded the union are also activists coming from the movement for national democracy. So for example, you have professors who fought martial law, and younger professor who were organized by their students from the League of Filipino Students, organizing their professors. And these young and old professors coming together, realizing that we need to build a union, and also aligned with some of the radical academics here who are not necessarily organized, but you know, they have that vision. So they came together and formed this. No? So you have the academic union, and you have the All-UP Workers Union, and this is the rank and file, and this is where they meet, the All-UP Workers alliance. So that's the union part. But of course, the union is for, you know, benefits and what else? Basically rights and welfare, etc. But the vision of the OUP union is to, you know, they call it militant. Makabayan means nationalist, right? So it's a, not just your, you know, it's a union that combines economic struggles with political struggles, because it is also influenced by a larger political force that is the movement for national liberation in the country. So it cannot be divorced from that kind of history, that anti-colonial history that has also shaped the history of the university. So second, there are, apart from the union, there are also political organizations within. So you have different organizations like Anak Bayan and League of Filipino Students and so on and so forth. You have artists. But among the teaching staff, we have CONTEND, Congress of Teachers and Educators for Nationalism and Democracy, which was my organization when I started teaching in UP. So basically, it's a political organization that that its primary aim is to popularize national democracy, to popularize Marxism, the Leninism, etc., the learnings that we have culled from the revolution in China, and so on and so forth. So it's the only political organization of professors in the university. So what does it do? It offers film showing like twice in a year. So we choose progressive films that we can show, not just local but also international. And it's also a good time for the organization to raise funds, right, for you know, other activities. So it's also an organization that is aligned with the peasant movement and the workers movement. So the organizations from the peasant sector, the workers, would most of the time partner with CONTEND for them to, you know, hold a forum or whatever in the university, right? And of course, it's also our duty to basically found to design our political campaigns, based on the struggles of the peasantry and the struggles of the workers. That's how we are also oriented. So it's basically an anti-imperialist organization that promotes the alliance of the peasants and the workers, and of course their struggles. So that's CONTEND. Well, we are very proud members of CONTEND. He just died very recently. He's a national artist. You might have heard of him, Bienvenido Lumbera. He was also a martial law veteran. And when CONTEND was built in, I would say, 94, the people who fought Marcos and who are teaching in the university, they all emerged to support it, to support the young people who founded it. So, yeah, so that's, so it's been around since 1994, and in 2013, we decided that we expand it, that we're not only recruiting from teachers, since it's a Congress of Teachers and Educators, so we can actually also recruit from rank and file staff, because they're also getting political education from the union, right? So they can also be part of CONTEND. We're also now getting members from graduate students who want to be part of CONTEND. We're also open to getting members from the College of Education who are not yet teachers here, but will be teachers when they graduate. So stuff like that. So that's CONTEND. Another sector here, because UP is not just a university, it's a community. You might have noticed there are residents all around, right? So there are also informal settlers, and there are residents who have been here for over maybe 75 years, right? And most of the residents here are actually also staff. But you know, at some point, you know, how they would also, you know, the movement from the countryside to the city, and how families, Filipino families, are extended and so on and so forth. No? So some of the houses here are no longer houses of staff, but they've been here for over 50 years. So they're considered as stewards, right? So they're UP community. So they also face various issues. So there's always threat of eviction, right? Because of some development plans and so on and so forth. And of course, so basically rights and welfare and safety. So we also have community organizing. And anyway, most of the members of the union from the rank and file would be part of those communities. So that's how we get to the, you know, grassroots, right? And then another sector would be the vendors. So there are informal vendors. They usually also belong to the UP community. And it's where we get cheap food, right? Because prices are rising, etc. So most of our students here survive their college life because of the, we call them manininda vendors. So basically, so there's also an organization of vendors. So Contend and the All UP Workers Union, etc. are, it's, I think, would be the newest addition to the sectors that we have been organizing in the university. So one of their struggles would be that the administration at some point was already refusing the renewal of their contract. So they have this, that one is an example of a vendor, right? So they put up a small table, or they put up this rolling store, if you are familiar. Right. So one of the threats is that they're going to cancel their contracts. But I think that was in 2012, if I'm not mistaken. So there was a need to organize them. Right. And so, yes, on account of that very strong organization and support that they were getting from the students and, you know, the union. So they were able to extend, and for the administration to recognize their association. So how do these different sectors I think the newest addition would be the Alliance of Contractual Employees, or ACE UP. So we realize that not everyone can be part of the union, right? Because most people are contractuals, you know? So and as we realized that in 2015, did something about it, maybe 2016, 2017, and founded ACUP. And because there are too many contractual workers among the researchers, etc. In fact, even among faculty instructors, you're an instructor for 5 to 7 years. You don't have tenure, etc., right? So we organized that. ACUP, so the union and Contend came together to build that. And so it's one of the strongest sectors here in the university. So now they're able to negotiate for a Christmas bonus, because contractuals don't deserve that, right? They don't get any sort of benefits. But because of a very strong organizing and participation among their ranks, they're able to get that and some more benefits, like Christmas bonus, what else, and other like credits in terms of leave, rights, and so on. So yeah, so you have ACUP, you have Manininda, the vendors, you have the teachers, and of course you have the students, you know, the radical students in the university, but they have their own organizing as well. So they have an independent organizing. All of these sectors would, you know, we recognize their independence and initiative, but we all come together through the Multi-Sectoral Alliance, or MSA. So we've built that alliance where we would meet depending on, you know, the situation, the matter at hand, but ideally we would meet once a month just to share what's going on, share some updates with various projects and so on. So that's how we are organizing ourselves here in the university, right? Okay, so it's sectoral, but also we have basic commonalities, like a strong affiliation with the basic sectors outside of UP, and as much as possible, we want our economic struggles to be also rooted on political struggles, right? Yeah. Okay. So.
I gotta fix your lap.
Oh.
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry.
Ooh.
Sorry. Can I? Is that okay?
Yeah.
I'm sure. I think we lost a little. There we go.
Okay.
Yeah. For me, lost.
Yeah. So how did it come about? How come there's that? Why such a comprehensive organizing? So of course, people from the 90s did not invent that. No, it's actually a product of a long, practice of political struggle in the university, and it began in the 50s. So the 1950s, you have the Cold War. And then by the 1960s, 1970s, you have the Vietnam War. And during that time, the university was experiencing political ferment, but the debate was mainly between the clerico-fascists, so-called clerico-fascists, and the liberals, right? And by the 1950s, that's where you would have but of course, as early as the 1930s, in Philippine society, you would have the Communist Party under Crisanto Evangelista. And of course, later on, the Filipinos under the Huk Balahap, or the Huk Bumbayan Laban sa Hapon, the Huks would later on be the freedom fighters for the Communist Party fighting the Americans after they fought the Japanese, right? So you already have that. Outside of the university, and then also they've also built the old party, where some of the professors, most of them have passed already, but they've been influenced by that also. And by the 50s, you would have young scholars like Jose Maria Sison, who was a professor at the Department of English, and you would have also students like Helacio Guillermo. You've heard of Helacio Guillermo, Alice Guillermo. And then you'd have Monico Atienza. Who else? So these people, Julie De Lima also. So they founded SCAUP. No? You've probably heard of SCAUP, not yet, for those who are. Okay. It's not very famous, don't worry. So there's UPSCA, University of the Philippines Student Christian Action, right? That's UPSCA. So UPSCA is like the more traditional Catholic organization because it's very strong in the Philippines, especially in the university. And you have the neighboring Ateneo de Manila, the elite school, where we would import professors, Jesuits, from the Ateneo to teach in the university. And some students were already being critical about that, like, why? Right? Why are they teaching us, etc.? So they labeled them the clerical fascists. No? So there's a group of young Turks who would build the Student Cultural Organization of UP, Student Cultural Association of UP, SCAUP. So it's a play in the acronym UPSCA. So it's the opposite of this religious organization, SCAUP. So this SCAUP was founded by Julie De Lima, Jose Maria Sison, Alice Guillermo, Helacio Guillermo, I think Monico Atienza, and some more. So they would be academics also later on when they're not too young anymore, right? So I think Professor Sison was their professor, but he was a very young instructor. So this was right before he got kicked out of the academe. And at the time, there was also left-leaning professors like Elmer Ordonez, who would pioneer the organizing in Canada in the 70s and in the 80s when he was exiled there. You would also have professors or academics like Isan Juan, who is, I think, a batchmate. You've heard of Isan Juan, who was a retired professor from, I think, the University of Washington, because he was also kicked out of the university. And Delia Aguilar, who's his partner, who's also, who they pioneered the organizing of Filipinos in the U.S. back in the 70s at the height of martial law. So they built this. And so from this, so first, of course, they build on the liberal discourse, anti-clerical fascism. And of course, they've learned from, you know, what was going on, right, worldwide. And so basically from there, they built Kabataang Makabayan, or the Patriotic Youth. So this was founded in 1964, also in the University of the Philippines. So they built that. And there's this really, just a short, this is my favorite story about Helacio Guillermo. He already passed. He's a great poet, literary critic. He comes from Tarlac, Hacienda Luisita. This is the infamous hacienda of a political dynasty, the Coangco Aquinos, right? So there were two Aquinos who became president of the Philippines during the post-Marcos period. And Helacio Guillermo's parents are Sacada. Sacada is a local designation for landless peasants. So his parents and grandparents were working for the Spanish occupants of the hacienda. Luisita is a Spaniard. So later on, after Cory Aquino and Ninoy Aquino got married, and they had Ramon Magsaysay, the CIA guy. So Edward Lansdale was assigned by the CIA to eliminate the hooks, right? Because they were already fighting the Americans. Like, they were, you're only supposed to defeat the Japanese, but why are you being, you know, anti-imperialist? No. So they sent Edward Lansdale of the CIA, and he partnered with Ramon Magsaysay to basically eliminate the hook balahap, and they were successful. So all of the say covert and overt actions applied to Vietnam and Jakarta, the Jakarta method in Indonesia, were first rehearsed in the Philippines. All of those, you know, torture, etc. So they did that to the hook balahaps, no, to the hooks, and so they were eliminated. But what's interesting is that when they so the reward for Ramon Magsaysay was he became president. He was rewarded by the White House. So they built an image of Magsaysay being the father of democracy, because, you know, through him, communism and terrorism was defeated. And so they have this, maybe you can search it on, or maybe we can listen to it later, this song, Mambo Mambo Magsaysay, which is after a popular American song, right? So, and then, so he was rewarded. So he became president of the Philippines because he's the father of democracy. And at some point, he died in a plane crash. That's what you get for, right? So, but the thing is, when they did it to Vietnam, right, when they tried the same mechanism, so Edward Lansdale was feeling triumphant, was very happy, even wrote a whole diary about it, and came to Vietnam but lost severely, right? And I would think that the difference is that in Vietnam, there was a super organized communist party, whereas in the Philippines at that point, there wasn't. We've lost so much on this. You know, peasant communities have been massacred, students killed, murdered, etc. So yeah, we need to recover from this. We need a win. It may not be a win for, you know, our strategic goals, but we need some kind of a let up from, you know, we've been bombarded with, you know, yeah, like, you know, Bloody Sunday, 8 comrades killed, you know, Lumad teachers, New Bataan, Chad Bok was my student. Yeah, he used to sit here, you know. So that's horrible, right? And it's also not good for an organization that with which you associate to just always be mourning and mourning and right. No tactical wins whatsoever, right? So we also need that kind of Yeah, so it's also important for us. And it's not just important because it's a means to an end, but we need reforms. You can't just, you know, throw away like, yeah, let's do revolution. But for people to believe in that revolutionary program, there has to be, you know, some immediate relief, some reforms along the way, right? It can't just be like, oh, you know, in the future. Like, it's like talking about heaven, right? Yeah. So you have to, you know, so it's also very important for us that, you know, we can run on a platform and we can win, yeah. Right? If we don't win, then at least we've made the anti-fascist struggle broader by being aligned with, you know, the liberals, the, you know, who don't want Duterte. So that's good. It's good enough. Who don't want Marcos? Who don't? Yeah. So yeah, we're preparing. Also, we're prepared for that moment. Like, but we're not gonna say like, hey, you know what? Bongbong's gonna win. You know, like we have to fight. You know, but of course internally, like we are seeing the surveys and like it looks like, you know, so we need to expand more. We need to be friends with more people. We don't have to be leftist, you know, like yeah, be more open, because at the end of the day you need more people to, you know, EDSA, it's people from the church, it's the middle forces who really poured themselves out, you know, put themselves out there, and they're good allies against the dictator Marcos. So we've learned our lesson from that also. Like, we cannot discount that factor, because in case Bongbong wins, and it's going to be a long struggle, so you'll need people, right?
I'm Mary Jane Mack, and yes, our office is open, and we are doing strictly phone consultations. If you would like to call and get tuned up, it's perfect time with everything that's going on and things aren't calming down. Pick up the phone and give us a call. It's quick and easy, and it's fun. If you'd like more information on it, you can look at MaryJaneMack.com or call our office at 888-777-4232.
Do you question what an authentic life really looks like? Tune in to The Alley Effect with Allison Blythe, authentically living life your way. Every first and third Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com, where Allison Blythe brings you tools, resources, and actionable steps toward your very best life. Take responsibility for your own happiness. For more about Allison, visit Allison, A-L-L-Y-S-O-N, Blythe, B-L-Y-T-H-E.com.
Choose the new earth on The Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. The Cornelia Stephanie Show is your catalyst for anchoring heaven on earth on a global scale. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
Meet Pastor Ariel De Assis, government employee with the Bangsamoro Moro Autonomous Region of Muslim Mindanao.
What are some of the social changes that you want for people in Mindanao?
The issue that affects Mindanao is also of national concern. All are related to national policy. I think one of it is our relationship with WTO, the international market, our relationship with EU, with our relationship with US, with the first world countries, and the economic policy or economic system that we have been are export-oriented and import-dependent. the same with our foreign debt. And these are the most crucial challenge to the Philippine government under the new leadership. Looking at the structural economic system, much more on our foreign relationship with US, with the other first world country, particularly on the open economic relations, the free trade agreement, that gives a disadvantageous position to our agricultural sector. We are exporting raw materials and it turned out to us a finished product. And how would national industrialization spark from our agricultural based economy? So these are most challenges. And in national character, this is also what is affecting the economic activity of Bangsamoro region or Mindanao. Because almost 60% of the national economic national gross product derived from Mindanao. Our gross GNP. Mindanao contribute large to the national GNP. So the same economic structure and policies that is prevailing, and the same that is also affecting the Mindanao economies. So relating it to the national industrialization, the national leadership must look at these things, because here if we have a national program for national industrialization, it will generate employment for one. Less people will go abroad as a domestic worker, rather on a skill base. We will now reduce the impact of slavery. I think these are interrelated, and Mindanao people look at the same policy. National, yes. So I think we need to strengthen the people-to-people relationship, people-based or community-based relationship. I see the importance of community-to-community solidarity, so that when 1, 2, 3, 4 communities come together, it becomes a voice. Though it is 1, 2, 3 people are in the wilderness, it becomes a voice of the world. I think this is the essence of solidarity. We need to show to the world, to show to other people that we are not enemy among ourselves. We come brothers of the world, sharing the resources of the world, food for livelihood, not for hunger. We will support support farmers cooperativism. The same with if you are from US, there are farmers there. There will be relationship, community farmers in the Philippines or in the Bangsamoro. These are very innovative process. We don't no longer pass through a tedious governmental structure waiting for our ambassador and economic to relate with our government. But in our small ways, we can change. We can institute change within ourselves, from your community to my community. Keeping the line of communications of interchange is one of it. Exchange of information, our social media, we use it for social changes. We will prevent anti-trafficking. We will prevent trafficking of women, trafficking of children, because there are so many victims on this trafficking. Drug trafficking. At least if there are community to community, people's relationship, people themselves are getting armed, getting aware, getting united against the social vices that is trying to control the world, drugs, any other. So I pose this challenge to social activists to go down and relate to the community where they are and let that community link to the third world. So there will be a third world, second world, first world, community-based international solidarity. Yes, because it's the common notions already this time. When you are a terrorist, the fact that there is an anti-terror law, that can easily persecute those seemingly allegedly terror. But this allegation, tagging a person for being red or a terrorist, should be prosecuted according to the judicial process that is made available as a remedy. Unfortunately, if the government is persecuting you for anti-terror, you can immediately put to jail. Then later on, there will be due process. You have already served the sentence of the crime. So this is really unfair. That's why there are so many against the anti-terror law.
Meet Mom Halim Diakom, retired special education teacher and member of Alliance for Concerned Teachers.
I'm Mom Halim Diakom.
Thank you. What has inspired you to be politically active in your community?
Not actually an inspiration. It's actually rage that remains in me, especially that I am in a teaching profession, and I feel there's a rage because I feel that we are oppressed more so with our, in terms of salaries. I'm talking of the rank and file teachers. Yet we are overworked, overloaded. We report on Saturdays without any extra remuneration. And joining that political organization, like the Alliance of Concerned Teachers, I found it helpful because that is an organization which can represent teachers legally. We have legal mandates for that. It is stipulated in DepEd orders, and there is the Civil Service Executive Order, and there is a DOLE memorandum for that. So it is safe, it is legal, and we could assert our rights and privileges through that association that could represent us teachers.
Yeah, you talk about this rage, right?
Yeah.
This anger around salaries and being overworked, right?
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you're doing to push for higher salaries?
It is always our battle cry. The Alliance of Concerned Teachers has always this battle cry, that our platform to give us decent salary, living wage, a wage that can provide our needs, that can support our needs. That we cannot say that we are like ordinary worker in the government, because maybe fathers don't observe this, but in our community sometimes we do not have time in our family because we leave house, we leave our house as early as 6:30 to be able to attend the flag ceremony, assembly every morning, and we have to leave school past 5 o'clock in the afternoon because we are having this biometric system of checking our attendance. And when services are required without any extra remuneration, we are asked to report even Saturdays or Sundays in school. Aside from that, we are not given extra allowance for our what we need in our classrooms. So we are the workers that bring everything from our house, mm-hmm. unlike other government workers that they bring anything from the office to their home, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when I think about what's happening with teachers globally, it impacts the students, yeah. right? So how do you see this impacting students?
It's really, it really plays a great impact because, of course, when the teacher is happy, students will be happy. If the teacher is contented to what he is earning or to what he is doing, because for most teachers become teachers because they love teaching. It's their passion to teach. And more so, if given the happy environment, the salaries that could be called a living wage, then there's no reason why learners will not learn.
Mm-hmm. And so if you had enough supplies, so say, you know, a school had enough supplies for students, what kind of things could they do?
Well, that would be a very great, that would help. That's a great help to us. Because all you have to do is just do what these things are for the learners. And we need not worry where to get these materials for them.
What are the materials, like books?
Materials for mm-hmm. some activities. For example, like me, because I'm a special education teacher, I need some manipulative materials mm-hmm. for the blind, for instance. For the hearing impaired, I need some kinesthetic materials for mm-hmm. them to learn. Because these learners learn more if they are socially skilled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so outside of education, right, and looking at what's happening for teachers and students, what other issues are Filipino people facing today?
It's been a decade, you know, I just do not know. These problems, of course, go down from the early generation to the generation where the millennials are now in. Because as I observe, these problems become more complicated, more serious as years go on. Especially now that we are in the pandemic, so it worsened. I just do not know. Politically, really a problem, because when we talk against, when we air what we feel, when we air what we want for the government us to do for us, we are misconstrued. We are red tagged,
mm-hmm.
and the government makes or say organized any kind of group just to oppress, or just to maybe intimidate or to harass us so we could stop. Of course, the effect of this is also great, because when we have these problems, people seem comfortable in their working zone, yet the government does not give enough supply for these people. The government does not hear what these people need, especially the poor farmers, the fisher folks, those who are really in the marginalized sector. So these problems worsen.
What would be a living wage for teachers?
Well, our battle cry is only 30,000, and that is very nominal. Nowadays, in a family of six, for instance, every day, that family of six has to spend 800 a day. That covers the food, all the toiletries, tuition fees, doctor fees are not included in that. So when you say 800 a day, that is tantamount to 30,000, 24,000 in a month. And what will you do with that 6,000? Is 6,000 enough if your children went to school, college? Is 6,000 enough when somebody gets sick in the family? Is 6,000 enough when a teacher still buys his or her materials to be used at home? Very nominal, yet the government cannot give that to us. When we ask for 30,000 increase for salary entry grade for teacher one, we see to it that 30% is the government is capable of giving that to us, because we know the budget. Teachers, the NCR Alliance of Busan Teachers in National Capital Region are present. They are lobbying during the budget hearing, so they know how much that DepEd's budget in this particular school year.
Mm-hmm.
We could have asked for more, but we know that the government cannot give that. See, very nominal 30,000.
So what would victory look like for you in the election?
Well, I think what answer would you like to hear? Victory of what we are pushing as our president, or victory of anybody else?
Victory for you, what you want.
Okay, very good. Yes, we are pushing for Lenny and Kiko. Because we can see, we have the same in mind. We have the platform. So if they will become victorious, I think there will be a very great change. Firstly, of course, there will be an end to tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
There will be an end to political dynasty. Okay. There will be an end to impunity. And of course, with this new administration, if she'll become fortunate, we're looking forward for returning back to peace panel for these peace talks, and we are looking forward for socio-economic reforms. I think that would uplift lives of the Filipino people if given the chance of having peace talks. There will be no groups that would contradict, because we are pushing for this comprehensive agreement, socio-economic reforms, genuine reforms. So when you say socio-economic, that covers all. It's a holistic idea or ideology,
mm-hmm.
that every Filipino would benefit.
Last summer, Representative Susan Wild of Pennsylvania announced the Philippines Human Rights Act. This act, co-sponsored by 11 other representatives, was introduced in response to the human rights violations under the Duterte regime. The act would ask us to suspend military aid to the Philippines until basic human rights measures are upheld. The Trump administration was in allegiance with Duterte's regime and supported corporate and military partnerships that do not allow for the space for Philippine citizens to have any input into the governing process. Duterte's regime used appropriation funds to 1, take land from indigenous communities for oil extraction, 2, use drones for so-called insurgency in indigenous farmlands, 3, environmental degradation of key food supplying regions, among other human rights abuses. While President Biden has preached human rights at the center of its international policy, the recently approved arms sale of $2.5 billion seems to indicate otherwise. And to be honest, most American presidents have not done right by the Filipino people in their country or in ours. Nevertheless, the international human rights community has stood with the people of the Philippines in efforts to hold Rodrigo Duterte accountable for his crimes against humanity. Currently, there are more than 2 million Filipinos in the United States. Filipinos in the U.S. are asking for change. The Malayo Movement is one of several organizations pushing for the bill, including the International Coalition for Human Rights in the Philippines. Advocacy for the Philippines Human Rights Act move alongside the Investigate PH, a project of the International Coalition for Human Rights in the Philippines, whose first report recently concluded that available mechanisms for civilians to hold police and military accountable are failing, claiming that the majority of extrajudicial killings, torture, disappearances, and unjust detentions do not result in prosecution, much less conviction. Here is your call to action. Ask your representative in Congress to bring a vote to the floor for the Philippines Human Rights Act. Let's take our tax dollars out of the extrajudicial killings happening abroad. We will have a follow-up episode in a couple months to discuss the aftermath of the election with Filipino leaders and allies. So stay tuned. Special thanks to my production partner and documentary filmmaker, Marina Domingo Young. I'm your loving host, Dr. Crystal Lee Crame. Thank you for listening and be well. Welcome to Us with me, Dr. Crystal Lee Crame, where we have critical conversations on the challenges of our time. Come dig in with me and my guests as we tackle critical discussions about the hard lines we draw regarding morality, inequality, and the spirit. Listen while we focus on the intersections of truth and justice as we learn how to coexist, pushing our social transformation to the next level. Let's get ready to be inspired and engage in questions about humanity and believe in a different world. As we look forward to listeners who want to experience media from an intersectional and healing justice perspective, Us with Dr. Crystal Lee starts now.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.